Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, what's it like? What's it like? What's it like to see the moment? To feel yourself growing? This is greatness that I'm showing. Close your eyes, I'm still glowing. Close the door, I'm still going. This is grand business. Have a seat and be a witness. Hey, what's it like?
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to Strictly Hoops with CJ Miles. Rate and review and subscribe and all that fun stuff on your podcast platforms and on YouTube. If you're watching there, muchly appreciated. Do press that like button, subscribe. It's always appreciated when you do stuff like that. If you weren't aware, the track that you're hearing at the beginning of the episode, It is Mass Fresco himself.
We didn't film me in a studio. We didn't stage it. That's actually myself and some of my friends. We do that from time to time.
I like the song.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You were a principal recently.
Yes, I was a principal for a half a day.
How did that go?
It was cool, actually. It was one of those things you don't really know what you're going to get out of it till after you do it, you know? Like, I knew, you know, I was going to enjoy being around the kids and, you know, it's always fun to go do stuff like that, but it's just where I am now, like what I got out of it, it was more filling than the normal ways you do it. And it teaches you a lot of and things you would like to do with your kids or teach your kids or things you would like to help with. All these things got pointed out to me and you get kind of put behind the scenes with numbers and the way they approach the day and things like that. And it was really cool.
How did it come up? Why did it happen?
So the school is in my old neighborhood where I used to live, where I grew up. So the middle school, they built it after I was out of high school. So it's a newer school, but my sister and the principal knew each other. And I've been working with the school from afar. I had been doing like just fundraiser stuff, helping with Thanksgiving, stuff like that with this, just because this is one of the things I try to do. I don't like to talk about it because I don't think you should talk about it. You shouldn't do it to talk about it. But that was I've had a relationship with the school for a while now.
I'm sorry to bring it up then. My bad.
No. I'm just saying. It just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I'm kidding. Did any kids get sent to the principal's office while you were acting principal?
No, they got a little leniency because I was acting principal, yes, right? Because yes. Now they I'm not the principal they see every day, so they would have stopped and talked. So
it's like when the substitute teacher comes in, the class gets rowdy.
Yeah. So I had to, you know, escort a couple of people, write a couple of notes. I was official though. I had the walkie-talkie. I had everything.
That's amazing.
And there was the real cool thing though. There were some guys I played against in high school and went to school with that work at the school also. So like that was really cool to see those guys and see how they were working in the community still and being around. And that was really cool to catch up.
100%. One final thing, non-basketball related. Did you see that Adonis, Drake's son, was in had a music video recently?
Yeah, I did. I saw him. Yeah.
Well, he says it's Adonis. Yeah, no, it's Adonis, not Adonis. It's Adonis, as my wife is telling me from the background.
That is his name.
Yes.
You cannot. Somebody might kidnap you for doing that up there. You better get that right.
Okay. Maybe I'd make an edit.
That's the president up there. You can't do that. You got to get that right. Yeah. No, but I saw it. I saw it though. It's pretty cool to see, you know, a kid to be able to, you know, follow his dad's, see his dad work all the time and be able to do it and get a get reception for it, you know?
And so when does the Isaiah Miles music video come out? Is it soon?
When he starts talking. Yeah. as soon as he starts, I'm going to give him three words. As soon as he gets three words, we're just going to repeat those three words.
Maybe it's just like a beat. Maybe it's just a beat and then you incorporate some of his sounds or something. Yeah.
Just sample him in, do it old school. Just scratch him in on a record.
That's jokes.
But that dude, yeah. He sits in all the time at home, actually, when I write and do music though. He sits in there. He fell asleep. I told you he falls asleep when he listens to me.
I saw him last week.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
because your voice is soothing. That's why.
I hope it's not because he's bored.
Well, we're gonna find out.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, he's going to get bored at some point, like every kid, right?
Yeah. Moving to basketball things. So the Raptors, they have one more preseason game remaining that will happen tomorrow against the Washington Wizards. But I mean, there are some things that we can take away, as we did last week, from what we've seen from the system, from the players, and also how some roles are being differentiated from previous seasons. So even focusing like specifically on Pascal Siakam, aside from the contract stuff, aside from all that money extensions, yada, 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 how is he being used differently from your standpoint? And I guess, like, how is it helping him if it is in fact helping him be more efficient on offense?
I think you, especially us right now at the beginning, because we don't know word for word what's being said to him about what they're trying to build. But I think the way it helps him, first of all, is it'll help you even more efficient as the year goes, right? Because there's not so much ISO, so much having to do with just everybody, all other eight players looking at you and the guy that's guarding you, you know? And then it's also going to allow more freedom at the end of games. So when it's time for us to be like, hey, Pascal, go win the game. Because now we've got so much involvement with all the other guys in the game. But I think the biggest thing is it'll help keep fresher over the year, because that's a lot. It's taxing to play that way. And when you got nights, you can almost pretty much get the night off because another guy's able to get 30 because we just took what the defense was giving. Like, if you don't care about those averages, which I don't look at Pascal that type of way, being around him, guys are all stars on winning teams with their numbers dropping 4 points. Like, it still happens. So like, if it's about that, if we win 20 more games, you're still an all star. You're the best player on the best team. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it helps him in the long run for sure. I think it makes the game easier, less tax on his body, nagging injuries, you know what I mean, stuff like that, and you can get rid of that stuff.
Yeah. And he mentioned that too the other day when he was asked about the Raptors apparently running a 10-man rotation. And he's like, you know, I think my legs will be happy about that, to paraphrasing, but that's kind of what he said.
Especially the way he plays.
Yeah, it's very physical, it's demanding, it's running, and you want to get that version of him as much as you can, no different than Scotty, which we'll get to in a second. And it's been cool seeing him kind of focusing on the defensive end. I mean, you've told me, we all kind of know that you have to kind of pace yourself in an NBA game when you are a high usage player. And so sometimes, you are resting a little bit on the defensive end because you simply have to, right? And your coach knows that too.
If there's two plays, you don't fully sprint back and you give me an extra 15 points, I'm going to have to deal with that. You know, like I think that's something we're going to have to give you.
I didn't want to touch on the extension contract stuff, but he is in a contract year. How does getting less shots and being less of a feature part of the role, could that muddy things going into next offseason? Is it just like he's kind of shown that he can, what he is and the player that he is as a focal point on offense, but going from that to what he could be this upcoming season in a fairly different role. And we'll have to see how things shake out. Like we're talking in preseason. I mean, you probably know too, that during games, 10 seconds left on the shot clock, the ball has to go somewhere and people are going to deviate to what they know. And that is give Pascal the ball and get out of the way. Is there anything that maybe a player might be thinking about in that case?
I think when you're trying to get it the first time,
I think right now,
I can't see, because like we said, he's shown who he is, what he can be. And like we just talked about, if he's a best player on a winning team, if they're a winning team, then the money's still going to be there too because of that, right? Like we know you're a big part of why we're winning. Just because your points go down, put it like this. If you saw that we needed to win more games and what you had to do was take less shots and give up 4 points, that's a thing too. Like, I see that too, right? So that means if I bring you into another situation, that you will be willing to adapt what we're doing so we can be even better. I'm not just bringing in a guy that's only going to give me this and that's all he's going to be able to give me, and I can't break him. I shouldn't say break him. I can't help him. He can't help us. He's just going to be 25 points and that's it. But we don't get that if he buys in, right?
Are all players at his level, of his caliber? No. Are they willing to? Yeah, they're not willing to do this. Okay.
No, I mean, there's guys not that caliber. There's guys that aren't that caliber that aren't willing to do it. But those guys look at it different because it's like, this is the thing that's keeping me here. Like, I haven't got to a stage where I get that leniency, right? Like, I don't get to not be the scorer because they brought me here, especially if I'm like sixth, seventh, eighth man, if I'm a shooter or a scorer, punch off the bench, I don't get the leniency of like, all right, we got a couple more guys. I'm going to kind of, nah, you got to still give me 15. I still need your 15. Like, him going from 27 to 23 is different from you going to 15 to 8.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Coming off the bench, right?
Yeah. But what about a player that is of his caliber? Maybe they're a former All-NBA. I mean, we're seeing how the trends are in the NBA. Yeah. And you and I have discussed this, that as you get older, your role changes and there just isn't necessarily those number one option reps for every single player as time goes on. And if you're not willing to adapt, say, I don't know, let's call it James Harden, just like as an example, like if James was willing to play more off ball, for instance, and he was able to be a facilitator, a spot up shooter, a catch and shoot guy, and he was willing to do those things, doesn't that kind of elongate your career?
100%.
Yeah.
James turned into basically a pure point guard. Definitely makes his career longer, right?
Yeah.
There's less time on the floor, less time getting hit all over the place, just less taxing of a season. And I also think guys want to win, like, ultimately, right? So yeah, we see the stack accolades and the money, the contracts and stuff that come, and like, you think that's substituting for it. It's not, you know what I mean? Because I get to do, because it's, I'm being recognized for being a high level player, but me as a high level player now, when I reach another status, now there's things I want on my resume as far as like, just as a basketball player, which is to win a championship. The accolades don't really matter now because I got them.
Yeah.
And that's fine that everybody else thinks that, but I want to win.
Mm. I mean, Pascal is showing that he can do this regardless of what happens with the Raptors. It's got to help his chances of, you know, just the amount of teams are going to be interested in his services going into next season. I mean, the one after 2024, 2025, that season, like, it just opens up options. So in some ways he's adding more elements to his resume, showing that I can be this guy, I can be that player, I can, you know, work off ball, I can work off screens. And that's another thing I wanted to ask you about is from the early sample size. And again, you've mentioned it, Darko mentioned it today. You're not showing everything right now, but how is he being used differently? How is he moving differently? How is he being challenged to operate from different parts of the floor?
A lot of them, they're operating in the slot more, especially for him. He's in the slot with like pick and rolls or like backside up screens. And like that's everybody on the perimeter, though. All the wing guys are trying to put them in dribble handoffs and stuff that's happening right on the catch. Either it's off of somebody's drive and you're catching and driving or catching and going, or you're catching and there's a screen coming on your catch type things, right? For spacing and constant movement. And you see that. And if all those guys become good decision makers in that, they're impossible to guard, right? Like, because all of them are two dribbles from the rim. Even Dennis Schroeder is two dribbles from the rim from out by the hash, right?
Yeah.
And then the other guys, because of their length and their athleticism, they're at the rim or they're able to get over the top, get to the corner, see the shooters on the backside and things like that.
Turnovers are a problem right now.
Yes.
Once again, I wrote keep that on down saying, in my notes. Yeah. Well, we got to go through all your notes, by the way. You got to empty the clip with your notes. Just want to point that out. Maybe we'll have a segment at the end. You know, what's remaining on CJ's notes? But the turnovers are obviously a problem right now. And a lot of it, it seems to me, and I defer to you, it's guys trying to make the right play, but maybe the passing windows aren't there. They're just not used to the timing, and they're still making their internal adjustments on the fly.
Yeah. That's what I see. My two things. One of them is just too many guys jumping to pass the ball. That's the one thing. That's like a fundamental thing. There's so many jump passes that guys get caught in the air and they're like, and there's nowhere to throw it, right?
Yeah,
or they have to throw it and it gets deflected. But the other thing, yes, because no, you can tell right now, pace is being preached at those guys.
Yeah.
Like pace of play, getting up and down, moving from side to side, moving. And that pace, that sense of urgency that you want to play with, it's going to cause turnovers. Just especially in the beginning, because everybody's trying to – because you might have a guy that's playing with that pace every possession, and some guys aren't, right? So that's leading them into turnovers.
Yeah, I hear you with that. And that was something that came up today, actually, with Grady Dick, which we'll get to in a moment here. It was Dennis and Darko saying that he's playing a little bit faster than he needs to. He's trying to make fast decisions, but it seems like his frantic energy isn't contributing to smart basketball plays, even though he is willing and able to make those. You know, that's why they drafted him, is that they felt like he was more than just a shooter. But right now, things are just moving a little bit too fast.
Yeah, he's... But the thing is, though, I love the pace that he plays with.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you got to learn how to play with it within what we're doing. But, like, the thing I wrote down about him is that he plays with – and a shooter, for that to be one of your main strengths, that has to be part of it. He's mm-hmm. got to play with that type of pace. He's got to be on the move. He's got to be going. And that pace allows him to crash the offensive glass, which he does really well from the wings, right?
Because he does, yeah.
He's always moving. And he's a good runner because of that. Like, he plays with such a good motor. And that's going to translate to the defensive side too, right? Like, once you figure out how to guard guys. It's not that he can't. And I'm not saying I haven't seen him. He's been terrible on defense, but it's just something that you know you got to work on when you come into the league. Playing with the most athletic and most talented guys you could probably see with a basketball.
Yeah. Do you have anything else on Pascal before we switch completely to Grady? Or was that kind of it? Elbow screens, curling to the basket, coming off down screens, Iverson cuts. His mid-range is going to shrink a little bit. Those attempts,
yeah,
in a good way.
Because of the ISOs. Yeah, because of the ISOs, he's not going to be in them as much. But I still like him off the catch and goes and the catching right into screens and handoffs that get him into that space. So they end up being ISOs, but just without so much time. Like,
yeah.
Quick decisions. Like, I get you in that space, and now you're on the move, and you can make the decision.
There was a play in the fourth quarter where Dennis and Pascal, they're running in transition, and they ran. It was an empty side, and I think it just happened. They just kind of read each other, where Pascal set a screen for Dennis, and then it was a quick pass, short roll, and now he's working in isolation along the baseline, spin move, mm-hmm. bucket. It's like those fast decisions that he's going to be challenged to make, not that he can't. And it should lead to good things, but empty side stuff, it seems like, is going to be a focal point for when the Raptors are, you know, operating from the wing. And when you have Dennis, a constant downhill threat, you want to make sure that under the basket is as clear as possible, just so you have that exactly. option. But the More empty space. Side stuff is going to be pretty important for the Raptors.
Yeah. All the early stuff that gets to that, or just Scotty, Pascal, OG, even Gary Trent Jr., even Dennis sometimes, getting into an early back down that can turn into either their post or a pick and roll. I love all of it. And we're seeing a lot of it because, like I said, there's not a lot of sets right now. Like, they're kind of playing within it. There's structure, but it's not a lot of, like, you don't see play calls. You don't see guys pointing. They're just like, go get that guy, screen him, and let's just get into the actions we want to work on type things. There's out of bounds. Obviously, we talked about that last episode. But right now, the early stuff and really just getting feels for each other and mm-hmm. where they can operate.
I don't want as many to go away. I mean, there are some players that have just such a fluid. No, it's so fluid. It's like majestic to watch. It's like the area of the court where the most beautiful version of basketball, I think, happens outside of Steph Curry, because he's ridiculous. You see it mm-hmm. when he hit yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what? De'Aaron Fox was in his space, right? And it was just a quick jab, go to the other side, step back. And mind you, it was from 31 feet.
Yeah, it wasn't close. It wasn't
Holy
close either.
Now, man.
Yeah, it wasn't
getting
close.
Better with age. Anyways, I don't want it to go away, but it might. But also, I mean, as we're talking this out, I mean, isolation opportunities, when he gets those from, free throw line extended on the wing, the midi is going to be incorporated, because I'm excited to see him not have to operate in a phone booth anymore. The paint traffic, the shrinking of the floor that teams did was a problem, but he still maintained, you know, being successful. Being like, you know, 50% from the field. But anyway, I'm kind of rambling.
Yeah, but But what you're saying is correct. And the other thing is, we still got to remember, this is Pascal Siakam.
Hooper.
This is preseason, right?
Yes,
like,
yes, yes,
the season's going to go on, and there's going to be – he's going to have his time, because it's what he is. And there's going to be times we're going to – it's just less time of needing him to carry it so much, right? But there's still going to be a month where he's just – like, you know what I mean? It's just out of control. And the only thing you can do is just come in there and throw him the ball, right? Like, you don't stop that. When a guy's got that going and has the capability of winning you games and bring such a threat, and when he's rolling like that, you let him roll until the defense starts just giving up everything else, right? So we got to remember that. Like, it's not something to be on such a high alert. Like, oh, no. They're going to change. I think it's just, we have to do this first. We have to continue this base. We have to build confidence in all these other guys. We have to give these other guys a chance to know where their reads are, because you can do everything, but they operate in two ways, backdoor cuts, corner threes. So I need to show them where to be so you can operate in all your ways.
Man, it's a luxury to have someone as talented as he is that's willing to operate off ball like this. I hope the Raptors don't forget about that.
Yeah. And then you got another guy who's just as talented and will be as talented with Scotty, who's doing the same thing, right?
Like, well, let's pivot to Scotty then. We'll get back to Grady in a second, but that was our next little segue right there. So again, similar question, like how is he being used differently and what do you like so far?
I like, when we talked about this last year, I think, so I like when he's got mismatches right now, whenever he's got one, there's no dancing around it. Like I'm going, it doesn't have to be pretty. I don't have to go in my bag. It's like, I got the advantage. I'm going shoulder, right hand, left, whatever it is. I'm getting there. Right. And then I think the same thing, he's getting his chances, right? I like that he's not being hesitant on shooting his threes when he's got a chance to, but he's being Scotty. He's handling his some, pushing his passing some. I think because he is such a good passer, he tries to make the greatest pass he can ever make.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's gonna fade too, because the turnover numbers are gonna tell him to stop, right? You know, like nobody else is gonna have to tell him. He's gonna look up and he's gonna have six turnovers. He's gonna be like, man, I gotta take care of the ball, right? Yeah. So but I think that's one thing he's got, but you can't double him because he sees over the doubles, he makes great passes, right? He's good down in the post, his footwork looks good right now, he looks agile, looks healthy. And I think that's really, really exciting to see, because he can create just as much problem and havoc as Pascal can.
Yeah. The turnovers are going to be an ongoing conversation, I think, with this team because of how different they're going to play. Yeah. And yeah, Darko has mentioned that turnovers, I mean, they happen. A lot of the best teams in NBA history, a lot of the teams that win championships, they're in the middle of the pack with their turnovers. And for someone like him, that's so creative, and you don't want him to lose that. You want to maintain that creativity, but he's going to have to balance it, which is tough. I mean, is it just reps, essentially, understanding timing and feel?
100%. It's just playing now. Like, it's just playing. And we got to know, pace is going to create turnovers.
Yes.
We just talk about this and that's not even from the defense all the time, right? Mm-hmm. It's just going to be turnovers. The pace, you want to play that fast. There's a fatigue factor that sets in at some point, but just miscommunication. Guys are just on high alert and they're trying to be creative too. So it's not like we're running sets and trying to do the same things, right? That's why you got to drill these foundations over and over and over so you get some type of familiarity. Like this space I'm in, I don't see one thing. I see all four things that could happen. So I'm ready for them. Because we used to talk about it with Golden State, as great as they've been, they will turn the ball over. They will
it's
not looked at negative with them because they're Golden State, right? Because they win and they do and they make majority of great plays, but they will turn the ball over because of the way they play. There's such a freedom. There's so much pace. There's so much creativity. Things happen. You deal with it.
Yeah.
Or you defend is what you do. Like. I mean, you gotta get it back because now it's extra possessions now, right?
Yeah. 0.5 basketball. He was asked about it the other day, and he had said that, I mean, to me, it's like, it's pretty simple. He's simplifying. He didn't get into it, but he's like, either you shoot, you pass, or you drive. Like, it's that simple. You're doing that constantly. But have you seen anything, especially as an off-ball player, within this 0.5 system, him flashing to parts of the paint, understanding where to go, making those screens on time? What have you seen from that standpoint?
Just I think growing into the understanding of the freedom that it will bring and not looking at it like, I have to play this way.
Yeah.
Like, approaching it like, all right, 0.5, so, like, I got to be on the move. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, I can create ways to get involved and make quick decisions. And I don't have to think about, man, I might not get it back. Because that's the thing, too. Guys kind of get, they haven't got a shot and they don't think it moves enough. When they play in 0.5, that ball moves. Everybody's got opportunity. And you feel in rhythm even without taking shots when you get touches and you're a part of plays.
Yeah.
So when the first shot comes, it doesn't feel like, I got to launch it just because I haven't touched it in 4 minutes, right? Like,
sure. He shot well from 3-2. Oh, sorry.
No. Go ahead. I was letting it go anyway.
He shot pretty well from three so far. I think it was two or three. Maybe I should look at it actually. But even when I was in Burnaby for the inter-squad game, I mean, he shot the ball pretty well from three. And yesterday against the Chicago Bulls, or 2 days ago, whatever it was, it was 2 of 3. And you know, some of it is he's a trailer. Other times, like, they actually ran a play for him to get a shot from the wing. Between the increase in touches for each player, even though it may be only 0.5 seconds, and some players getting opportunities to have plays run for them to shoot threes that maybe they're not usually accustomed to, but they know that the ball's coming. Do all these kind of things contribute to maybe a Pascal, a Scottie Barnes? And we know that both of them ideally do improve the three-point percentages. Does those kind of things help a player have better efficiency beyond the arc?
100%. Just because of the biggest thing is the confidence that it builds, right? And knowing what kind of shots you're going to get, which improves the way you can practice them. Because now, even though there is creativity, we're still in a foundation. And like you said, you saw the X's on the floor, right? We know the type of spots we're going to be in to be creative out of. So I think as long as you know you have a chance and you can be ready and you can be in the spots and you can understand what defenses are going to have to give up, it leads to the shots that gets guys better percentages. Like, especially with the guys that don't want to really shoot on the move, right? So they can get there early, get their feet down, get their hands ready. And then you got guys that you run in plays for now. Getting a play call for you is like the ultimate confidence, right? Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean you got to shoot it, but it raises your confidence level because that means they're thinking you're an asset to the situation right now. Like a targeted asset. Like, you need this shot right now. I need one for you. And that helps guys.
Yeah. Is the shot different at all? Do you see anything different about it?
I saw on his free throws, I saw him miss a couple. It looked like his elbow, like on the way up, he's out. Like, and then he's coming back in. It's not a straight in. And it could have been just that one because the camera angle switched and just allowed me to see it. And I was like, I hadn't seen it before that.
Right.
But as far as like just watching the flow of the game and the shots he's taking, I don't really see anything like bad or different that looks off or anything. He's just making shots. There's a few guys that are out there shooting fast, but that's preseason. Like, guys are just hyped to be on the floor, right? Like, everybody feels good, so they think every shot's going in. You know, it's like that type.
But then, not, unfortunately. He does have a kind of a slow load, and I think that's okay. If he's able to manage that and he's at a pace that makes sense for him, the three-point shot, I don't think it's going to be a massive part of his game, at least not, you know, next season, but being able to hit the open ones and some of the shots that we're talking about, that's what we're looking for. He may only shoot, you know, two or three threes a game, which might be different for a Pascal Siakam because of their roles in the offense. But again, just like, do you feel confident when you're putting the ball up? That's what matters.
Exactly. That's all that matters. And I don't think it has to be a fast load for him because his closeouts aren't going to be fast.
That's true.
They're going to invite it in the beginning. So like, I get to take my time, and then with a slow load, if they do start closing out hard, I'm out of there. Like, I can see everything that's happening. So it's to his advantage right now. As he becomes better and he wants it to be a part of his game, then you start working on speed.
That happened too. Andre Drummond, he was guarding Dennis and Scotty in pick and roll, and Scotty flared out to the three-point line, and Drummond's like, I want to make sure that Dennis Schroeder doesn't go downhill and get a layup. And so he let Scotty shoot it, and he made it. You know? Yeah.
Sometimes they're going to play 20 games before they change it.
Yeah.
Defense changes it. Like, they're going to need a real sample size. Or they're going to just be like, he's shooting it well right now. We'll be alert if he makes the first couple, then we'll change. But like, his first one's probably going to be a slow closeout for the first 20, 30 games.
100%. Do you, his energy level and his pace of play, as you mentioned, the tempo in which he's going is different compared to last season. I keep on saying it, I'm prefacing, saying it's early days, but the keys to sustaining that kind of energy, game in, game out, it goes to a lot of things that you're doing off the court. You know, what we see on the court is a product of that work that you're doing off of the court to make sure you can maintain that. Just things that he has to make sure he's doing to be able to do this in game 65, 70, all that.
I mean, obviously, taking care of your body, right? Like, making sure.
What does that mean?
getting with the training staff.
Yeah.
Making sure you're on top of, like, your strength training, like. That's in-season strength training, too. We're not saying you got to go in there and lift the weight room, but just make sure you keep yourself strong and keep yourself resilient throughout the season. Keep stuff just awake, alive. Keep the body alive. And then the reps you get on the floor on off days and things like that, understanding the where you're not overdoing it, and it becomes a problem. Like, your practice becomes a weakness because you're overdoing it. Now you don't have it for the game, but at the same time, knowing the days you need to get real game type reps in, and to keep that muscle fast twitch and keep that muscle working and doing right. So I think it's just a mental approach more than anything, just understanding. And then some of this is going to be new, because as you're getting better and as you're climbing, stuff presents itself as new. And it's like, well, I never been in a situation where I needed to figure out how to play 35 minutes for 70 games. So this is new, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah.
And you just figure it out. And he's got a great staff. That training staff over there is great. The strength and conditioning coaches are great. Like, everybody's welcoming and they're down to help us any way they can. So I'm not worried about that. It's just a mental approach of doing it.
Yeah. And I'm sure he's going to, I mean, nutrition, obviously, that's, don't got to say it. It's really important.
That's easy. And that's, yeah, nutrition is, yeah. That's why I didn't say it. But it's easy too, because you got the team helping you. You got, you probably got a chef at this point. I know a lot of guys have chefs in Toronto now. There's a lot of, there's a good group of chefs that kind of rotate between the guys that are really good. So there's great ways to help that out. They meal prep and do things for guys. So
you guys have like a preference between the chefs?
Well, I don't know.
I'm just curious. Like, if you have like four chefs, you know, rotating between the team, they're like, oh, I mean, I want Gabriel over here for 3 months or something.
Oh no, so I mean, like, I say that, but they, like, a couple of guys I work for, a couple of guys, it's not done by the team, it's just, they, those guys just kind of end up in a circle. Yes, like, yes. Yeah, so.
Okay, gotcha.
And then one guy, I might only work for one guy sometimes, it's just, but it's still a similar circle that happens, or a guy leaves and then a young guy just inherits the guy chef, right? Like, because he's the one that's open, right, in the city. Like, it's like that type of thing.
Sometimes guys inherit houses too from other players.
100%.
Cool. Yeah,
that happened to me in DC. Bradley Bill. Shout out to Brad.
You took his
couldn't
house?
Couldn't find a place. Couldn't find a place. And he was moving into another place. And like literally let me just rent it short term so I could be in there for the year, because they could have sold it. But they held me down.
That's nice. See, Bradley Bill seems like a great teammate.
Yeah, he was a good dude. Whole family. Kamaya, all of them. They're good people.
He's the third option on the Phoenix Suns. Wow.
He's going to get the third defender.
That's crazy.
And if he gets going and you switch the other guy on him, then the third defender goes to Kevin Durant or Devin Booker.
Yep. Yep. It's going to be silly.
I would go in there and play zone. Just go in there and just play zone and be like, hopefully they just miss all their threes today. Just like, we're going to stand in the paint and make everybody just shoot the ball, which is also not the greatest plan, but I feel like I got to do something different, right? Like,
yeah.
Even if 40% is great from three, at least it's only 40% chances they make a shot on this possession.
Exactly. That's my logic too. Before we wrap up on Scotty, I wanted to ask you about players. Do they typically lose like 4 or 5 pounds in season, like from the day that they start the season or training camp to the day that the season wraps up? Are they losing a few pounds?
During training camp, guys lose weight all the time.
Yeah.
Just because you're doing 2-a-days, you're doing like you lean out a little bit more, and then you kind of get back into your either get back a couple or it stays pretty close to that, depending on obviously the amount you play. Because even the guys that are, because even working out, like when you're not playing, still as a substitute for playing. Playing is a different animal, right? And you can do all you can to maintain, but it's not the same. So I think guys definitely lose a little bit in training camp. Especially if you go to training camp with Byron Scott. Shout out to B. Scott. Guys lose like 50 pounds in Byron Scott's.
I remember some of those clips from his Hornets days. Okay.
I'm telling you because I was there. That's
my
bad.
I apologize. Please. The floor is yours.
So what was
ISO.
It? I showed up to my first training camp with him. Alonzo G. Shout out to Alonzo G. He's working with Minnesota Timberwolves now. He goes, we weigh in, right? And like, I would get to camp at that time. My fighting weight was probably like 225, 224-ish. I would get to camp like 228, 229. Because like you said, you're going to lose that.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of like, and I was 8-9 years. So I had gotten my process down pretty good. I knew where I was at that time. So we get into camp, right? And Alonzo was like, yeah, what's your weigh in? I was like 228, 227. He was like, all right, I'm going to go with you on the next weigh in. You're going to be under 220. This is what he says to me before camp starts.
Really?
And I'm like, get the out of here. I'm like, yeah, right. He's like, bro, you're going to be 215 by the time the season starts. I said, there's no way. No way. Get through camp. The last way into camp, I am 217. Kid you not.
What are you guys doing?
Running.
True.
It's literally Coach Carter. Like, so I'm going to say, like, it's like when he was like,
they kind of look alike too, Samuel Jackson.
We didn't work on any plays. He's like, well, what did we do? He's like, run. So what do you think we're going to do in the game? Run. Right? It was literally that. But I would say this. I do not remember getting tired in a game in that season. I will say that. I do not remember getting tired. Even throughout the season, when you don't run as much, like, the conditioning level that they got us to, and obviously I played too, but, like, where they got, I do not remember getting tired during that season.
Yeah.
Like, it was hell. Don't get me wrong. And it's probably the reason that Luke Walton retired. But but I'm telling you, that was crazy. Like, I'm talking about defensive sits and slides on top of the running. We wouldn't touch a ball for the first 20 minutes of practice. Like, and then when we touched the ball, that was a conditioning drill. Like, it'd be like these full court sprints. Layups where the ball couldn't hit the ground, like real old school. Like, I'm talking.
Just a menace.
Yeah, it was crazy. But
yeah,
we're a young team, and he wanted to run. That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
So just like now, we want to shoot threes. So all you do is see guys shoot threes all practice. This is what it is.
Actually, it brings up an interesting point, because people on media day, Scotty has said that, you know, during the off season, he gets a typical question: what'd you do? What'd you work on? Yada, yada. And he said that he ran a lot of running, but at the same time, he put on like 8 or 9 pounds of muscle. People are very confused by that.
During the
media day. Yeah. He said that he worked on running. Yeah, during the offseason, he focused on running a lot more because he didn't feel like, you know, at the end of last season, the previous campaign, that he wasn't in good enough shape to play the way that he wanted to and sustain it throughout his whole season. So he's like, I ran. But at the same time, further to what you're saying, he said he also added like 8 pounds of muscle
during the offseason. Offseason, that makes sense, though. Like, first of all,
running. But he's also running. That's why it's confusing. Running, like, was he just, yeah, okay, good.
He lost fat. He lost body fat. We don't lose muscle, though, right? So, like, and running triggers, I forget the study. I remember reading about this, but running triggers, like, it primes the body to be able to gain muscle. Like, that fast twitch and that it does that better than almost anything. Because he's sprinting. He's not running long distance. They're doing sprint, track work, like, the stuff they're doing. And then he's lifting the whole time. And he's, like, 22. So he's still Wolverine at this point. So his body is just waiting for him to give it something, right? It's, like, it's just eager. Like, whatever you give me, like, a body at that age.
Yeah.
Like, when we're playing professional basketball already, that body is like, it takes 3 weeks to program. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? You get that, and everything can happen really quick. You see these guys change their bodies quick at that age. So it's not foreign at all. Like, honestly.
Okay. Well, there you go, people. A lot of people were curious about that. It was confusing to them.
No, it makes sense. Cause you typically think losing weight, and yes, you lose weight, but like, he gained muscle because you got to think the legs are going to get stronger. So the legs are going to grow. And then he's working out in the weight room. So, like, it makes sense.
It probably means that he also was in the weight room a lot. Like, he was training a lot.
Uh-huh. And it means he was eating.
Oh, yeah.
It means he was eating like a madman. Because, like you said, at some point, still, though, the burning from all the working is still going to make you, because it will eat. If you're not eating enough, it will eat the muscle. Like, you have to build the muscle again the next day.
Yes.
So he's got to eat like a madman. He's got to be eating probably 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day sometimes.
Ooh. Yeah.
Like, at his size, because his body at that size probably already burns. I burn 3,000 calories on a light day at my size, sitting around. That's not even like doing the same stuff like that he's doing. So, like, he's burning 5,000 calories in a day easy.
Yeah.
So he's got to be getting close to that eating.
Lots of chicken.
And in the summer. And in the summer, if you're running, playing, lifting in all in one day, and your 22-year-old metabolism, he's got to eat.
Yeah, he's getting after it on the dinner table too.
He's got to.
All right, let's get to Grady. Let's go back to Grady. We started with him earlier, but we'll finish it off now. So you had mentioned that his defense is not good. Yeah, sorry, my bad.
No, I was saying we had a 3-year-old distraction coming in.
And I'm saying it was like, I was distracted by what you're saying. I mean, the Byron Scott story was pretty good. So kudos on that. Yeah. The people want more stories from you.
I mean, there's a lot of them. They just have.
That's good, because we have a podcast. So
true. But to Grady's point, I was not saying that he's bad defensively. I was just saying that's just something you know you have to learn.
But see, I wanted to ask you, because it seems like he's making like with some of the principles that they have in place. And Darko has said that we haven't really shown a lot of our schemes at the moment, doubling the ball, just things like that. Like they haven't done any of that. But the principles, it seems like when it just comes to like making those quick shuffles left or right, recognizing the weak side as the ball's rotating around to the strong side, he's making those moves. And then when on closeouts, he's reading angles really well. Also, I'm the person that's not a professional basketball player, so I defer to you, but
So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's just, you just know that's gonna be a thing as the season goes. That's gonna be the thing that keeps him on the floor or not, right? Like, that's what I mean by it. I'm not saying, like, that's what I was saying. All the tools he has will translate defensively. He's athletic enough, fast enough, quick enough, smart enough, has the length, size, you know what I mean? But it's just different. Mm. And during the season, he's not going to be playing against the guys that play in preseason.
No.
Right now, he's playing against the 10th, 11th, 12th guys. He's going to come in one time, and he's going to have the sixth man of the year stand in front of him.
Mm.
Or he's going to have a starter that's back in with the second in front of him at the wing position. A lot of wing guys come out early and come back in. So that's – and you're going to learn how to deal with that. He's going to have to know his personnel. There's going to be guys he thinks they know their games. Or he thinks they, or because he doesn't know their name, he thinks they know their game, and that's not going to be the case. Like that guy is just he's waiting like you've been waiting. He's been waiting 2 years. You just got here, so he's already got an advantage of time, right? That's what I mean by that. But still, with him, there's so much to love: the pace, the effort, the shooting ability, obviously the ability to be able to be more than a shooter. You can see it in his game. You just got to learn how to pick his spots, but that comes from playing. He needs playing time more than anything right now, and that's the thing. That's why the 905 is down the road, right?
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Naturally, I mean, most players, a lot of players, they spend some time at the 905 or in the G League affiliate if a team has one, just for that very reason. You want them to play, but I don't know. It just seems like they want to kind of keep him around. And right now, he's as I've mentioned, Darko, he likes to run a 10-man rotation now. Before I say this, there are some players missing. But if he's able to make his way into that 10-man rotation, whether we feel like he should be in there or maybe it's because of front office, I don't know, they want to see him play this season, which I'm sure happens. Those reps are going to have to come, inside games, and it might just be a 5-minute sample size compared to 905 time, which he's facing lesser competition, but he's playing more. It's like it's a weird balance that I want to get your take on.
So one thing I'll say is it's lesser in the G League, but it's still very challenging. It's still reps, right? It's still reps of our system, of our principles, of our things that we want to do, right? And then we can always time this. Like, I remember when I got sent, when I was playing, it would be like, it was thought out, right? It wouldn't just send you away. And, so say they're going on the West Coast wing and they knew I wasn't going to play. Everybody's healthy. Everybody just like, whatever, we're going to send you to go play. And then you'll meet us back here when we get back, because we're not going to practice a lot while we're on the road trip. We're going to be traveling. It's a waste of time for you. You're just trying to figure out a way to get in extra workouts. And that would be what it was when I wasn't playing, when I was on those trips, catching cabs to the arena early, trying to get a gym in between on off days, things like that. You know what I mean? And it was just a hassle that we didn't have to have when I could literally be playing games and practicing it and going over our reps and going over our plays and doing all these things, right? There's only so many one-on-one games me and Ronnie Price could play back then. Like it was just only so many. And that's the thing. So I think that 905 is super important. It's close. It's not like he's got to get sent down to Idaho or something, like, right? Like every team has a team now. It used to be three teams assigned to one. And like I got sent from Utah to Albuquerque. And then the next year I got sent to Idaho. So I was nowhere near. Then they made the team in Utah and guys drove 20 minutes back and forth. They'd be at both games in the same day. So now that we have that, take advantage of it.
So you think he should spend some time down there? If
he's not playing, he's going.
Yeah. Is there a benchmark for minutes? Like if he's right now, I mean, and again, I've mentioned this, the 11th and 12th man in the Raptors rotation or in their whoever is looked at as 11th, 12th man, like, I think it's going to be a pretty talented person compared to last season. Right. And so is it like, how is the front office kind of bouncing it. Like, they want Grady to play 6 minutes of NBA action every night. Meanwhile, there's an opportunity to play 30 minutes in a G League game. Like, it's kind of like, are you essentially just like valuing how much is this player helping us win games? Is that kind of it?
100%. So, like, if we're trying to win and we don't think right now he's in the plans for that right now, if we can go 5, 7, 8, 10 games without him playing, send him.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if we got a home stretch and we can send him on the – if the game is not on the game day, we can send him on that day. So if we play on Wednesday and the G League plays on Tuesday and Friday, send him.
Yeah.
You know, like, why not? Like, and it only does – it only builds confidence for him. It only helps him when he gets put in the real game.
Yeah.
Because now he doesn't get out there and have to find a way to get the rest off.
Keeps him in shape too, yeah.
100%. Keeps him in shape. Even though the way he plays, I don't think he'll get out of shape right now. He plays so hard.
Yeah. You like that about him, right?
I love that about him. I love the way they, especially right now for the position he'd be in for your team, he would be coming off the bench. He would be a 7, 8, 9, 10 guy. That's energy. That's a ball of energy. And that type of energy on a 6-game road trip in game 4 when that game's the back-to-back is lovely, right? It changes the game. It gives Pascal energy. It gives Scotty energy. It gives them more minutes they can sit out. Like, you see him, he's in the front row in a preseason game chasing down a loose ball. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not going anywhere.
That's him.
At least not anytime soon. Like, because right now, that's who he is. That's who he has to be.
19 years old.
Old to be young.
The jump shot hasn't gone according to plan so far. I think part of that is understandable. But from your perspective as also a shooter, what are you seeing and what is he adjusting to on the fly? He mentioned adjusting to the court spacing has been a challenge in a good way because there is so much more space.
The spacing, obviously, that's just getting used to the game being played a certain way. And like we talked about, knowing the type of shots you're going to get and the more reps you get and
he's talking like physical court, like the court's bigger.
Uh-huh.
That's what I mean,
knowing where you are. And then speed right now, like you said, he's still amped up. Like, you know, he's still in his first handful of NBA basketball games. There's a adrenaline factor that just kind of like that plays into that, that is going to have to go from playing. Like, you're just going to have to adjust, take a breath, slow down a little bit. You always got, when you can shoot it, you always have the advantage. So, like, you don't have to take rush shots. You can take one dribble pull-ups. You can take drives to the rim. You can find ways to get things. And then me personally, when I look at just his shot in general, it's a little flat right now. Like, and part of it is the ball, and he's shot like this. When you watch him, he's always shot like this. And I think it's something that he's going to have to adjust going forward, to especially with range and being more dynamic. The ball gets behind his ear, so it turns into a slingshot sometimes. So the distance that he has to cover the distance from it going backwards, which is what's making it flat, because now I have to pull it forward instead of keeping it in a pocket in front of him. And it goes into an arc right now because it gets behind his ear. It has to come back. He has to slingshot it like a slingshot does.
Right.
And that's what's making him flat. And one of the things that made me very streaky when I was young was I had the same tendency, which is why I can spot it. It's one of the first things that I look at watching shooters, right? Bad feet, pace, the basic things for me. But that's one of the biggest things I notice right now. And that comes from reps, strength, all these different things, right?
Yeah. Actually, on that note, and maybe you have something to weigh in here, but when I talked to OG in Burnaby, and I asked him about going to Steph Curry's, you know, camp over the summer, and he had said that one of the things that he learned about was, you know, the importance of game reps, game speed during practice. And there was a case last week where him and Grady, they were doing pull-up shooting drills, you know, come around screen, crossover, take a shot. And the pace that they were operating at was like complete opposite, where OG was doing probably what he noticed and what he learned about at the camp, where everything's, you know, hard dribble, boom, step back, shot. But then Grady, he was moving at a snail's pace, you know? And I wonder if that's on purpose so we can get the technique down, because right now things just aren't, you know, flowing the way that he probably felt they should be.
I mean, I don't know, but it's got to change. Because he's not going to shoot it like that in the game, right?
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I had to learn. And I learned from watching Ray Allen, watching Kyle Korver, watching Derek Fisher. Like, those guys, they get after it. Hmm. And that was the same reason why, as I got older, I would be like, I would tell young guys, or ask a young guy to shoot me, not tell. I would ask, like, you want to shoot? I wouldn't tell them. I wouldn't say anything to them. I wouldn't do it. I would go do my rep. And a couple minutes in, it's like, either you're going to get embarrassed or you're going to figure it out. Like,
yeah,
just, you know what I mean? And that's how I go. And one of these days, they're going to turn that into a competition. And Grady's like, I'm not losing today.
Yeah.
And he's going to figure out why he's losing. And it's because the speed he's going in, the reps he's going in, and not really, because he's not going to get better until he starts to go at the faster reps.
Could it be like a step backwards so you can take steps forward?
I mean, yeah. So you just simplify what you're doing to get the reps in. Like,
it's probably happening. That's what I'm guessing. Because he knows, I mean, like even the coaching staff too, there were coaches passing him the ball. They know that he should be operating faster. And I don't want to make anything about what I noticed. It was just something that I thought was interesting.
No, 100%. And it could have been just the day. It could have
been
tired. It could have been something, but it could have been anything, right? Like, man, we don't have the context for that, but I can say every day it's got to change. I can say that though. I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying if it is, it's got to change. Because even OG was not like that. OG wasn't like that when I was there a couple years ago. You know, so like that's something obviously you learn, and that's something I really believe takes shooters to the next level is the way they prep for it. Because I got to be faster than the defender.
You should text him, tell him you're proud of him.
So he can. Side note, hold on. Speaking of texting, OG texting Dame Lillard, "Welcome to Toronto" is the most OG thing that OG could do.
Yes. Yes.
It was hilarious. When I saw, I could not stop laughing. I almost cried, like, because I was like, "That is that to be in that situation, to play around like that in that situation is crazy."
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Everything we've learned about OG since he became a Toronto Raptor, again, gradually, it makes sense that he would do that.
100%. Yeah. 100%. He's not. He's true to him for sure. He's him. He's OG.
I want to ask you about as we wrap up the pod here, the in-season tournament. There's a lot of conversations around how the players are going to perceive it, how much they're going to care. Can you manufacture caring more about a game in December November actually is when it begins, when the ultimate goal is still the ultimate goal, which is an NBA championship. And we've talked so much about how players, teams, they ramp up so they're peaking at the right time. And we're talking about this in-season tournament, the games start mattering come November 7th, and then the championship games on December 9th. So just your thoughts on the concept and the NBA making this pivot.
I don't know. Like, I'm really still trying to figure it out, right? Like,
yeah.
It sounds cool. Like, when it was on paper and you hear it, I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And then you get, and the more you think about it, like, you start seeing what it could not be, right? What it could
just be games,
it could just be games. And I think, what's the incentive, right? What does it really do? Does it help? So if it helps me in my chances with the NBA championship, it's different. So like, there's something on it that helps with seeding or something later in the year, if it plays a part in that, which all games do, right? There's still games in the season. So you're hoping that guys are just like, we're making it a tournament, but you still need to win these games for your seeding at the end of the year anyway. So we're hoping it just carries into making the tournament better. But I don't know. I think it's more for us than it is for them.
Yeah, 100% it is. But I think the NBA is hoping that they kind of found something, and the concept is very popular in soccer, and so that's why, or football, that's why they decided to take this route. And there is some money incentive, but considering what some of the top tier players are making per minute in their lives, I'm not sure if it's really going to matter. They get to go to Vegas if they make the semifinal or final. I suppose there could be something there. But again, I'm having trouble seeing why players are going to matter. Or they're going to put more weight into those games too.
That's for the NBA team coming in Vegas soon, huh? That's what they're doing. They're testing it out.
T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I want to get the money for other guys though.
Yeah.
Like, I think if they know that they can get that money for other guy, I think that would be cool. Like, and it's still winning games. But I still think, like I said, it's definitely for us more than for them. And it will definitely help certain fan bases. It'll eventually create more different rivalries too. You'll cross other fan bases that aren't so classic. Like, it doesn't have to be the Chicago and Boston, or the Boston and Cleveland, or it doesn't have to be those teams. It can be up and coming teams being introduced to fan bases a little bit differently.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of the groups, because one thing I noticed is that, and that is an appealing part. Like, you want to see, some of those Western Conference teams, the Raptors face them more than they do usually. Yeah. But it turned out that the Raptors, they're facing a lot of Eastern Conference teams. Like, there's some teams that are in their division that are in their groups. So you're like, yeah, it's Celtics, Magic, Bulls, Nets. There's two teams there that are in their division. So they're facing them five times anyways. If they were able to mix it a little bit, and maybe that's the future of this, but I think there's more intrigue if you're mixing up East and West. It creates scheduling conflicts. I understand that.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. That's the only thing that messes it up, right? The scheduling, because now you got to do that. You're going to have guys flying back and forth certain places and doing things. So unless you just like stop the season and meet in the middle in one place at some point and have like shifts, like almost bubble it, like have a group of teams here, a group of teams there.
Don't mention the bubble.
You won't have to actually be in the bubble. I just mean the concept.
I don't want
anybody having a nervous breakdown on me, because like, and I'm not making light of that situation. I wasn't there, so I couldn't. I'm glad I wasn't there, honestly. But if you do it like that, like, and it's essentially that takes away the scheduling conflict, and it gives rest because guys don't have to travel up to every game. Because like, when you hear Dame Lillard talk about the bubble, that's what he talks about. He was like, you saw so many guys play some of their best basketball because a discipline that they had to have during the season, they did not have to have anymore. They did not have to do the extra work on their body and figure out, or young guys that just didn't know how to take care of themselves with the travel and hadn't figured it out yet. They got to play, ice, eat, and go sit down. Wake up in the morning, 9, 10 o'clock, and do it again. It's like being at home in the summer, right? Like, when you see guys in the summer doing this amazing fresh leg, between the legs dunks, all the stuff they doing, that's what you get. So maybe, who knows?
Yeah. So the answer is, we don't know.
Y'all take my idea, send me a check, by the way.
All right, y'all. Fun episode. Oh, any more notes? We gotta empty the clip on the notes. Is there anything that we're missing?
Hold on. Let me grab the infamous
the notepad.
Notebook here. Yeah.
Go to chapter 3.
Yep. Chapter 3. They do a good job in transition, giving the ball up.
They do.
I've noticed. They get off it. The guys don't over dribble it, and that's why guys are getting the ball back or things like that. The driver's really looking for the corners. They're really trying to get that. But by consequence, the guys that can really shoot it, Gary Trent, Grady, even Scotty, they got to learn how to play the deep corner better. Like, they're kind of – there's a turnover that happened in the Chicago game. Who's driving? Somebody's driving and trying to kick it to, I just lost the player's name, but I know they're trying to kick it to the corner because the guy helps. Well, because they don't play deep corner, they go up. It ends up being a turnover because the defender is able to turn and get wide, and he throws it right to him. But if he throws it, if the guy plays deep corner and keeps drifting, the pass gets there. Or the defender isn't able to help. So, like, we talk about, the higher you are in the corner, you make the court smaller.
Right.
Because the defense can be in a gap and be higher in the gap. It stops the drive. It stops the backside from having to help, all these things. That was one of the things. Still very, very active hands, the team, as a general. There's so much length. There's so many guys. Like, they just – that is
– deflections are a goal.
Yeah, my next note was pace a little fast, leads to turnovers. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Grady's good runner, pace, rebounding. We talked about that. Dennis is a nightmare in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
When he's in a slot position with the ball, whether he's rejecting the pick and roll, using the pick and roll, making a pass, anything in the slot, he is 1.5 dribbles from having that ball at the backboard. And he changes directions. He does, the movies got where he kind of turns his back to him. And
he loves that. Yeah.
He got his, but any of his crossbody crossovers, he takes that ball from like whatever hand to the next hand, and he takes it down at an angle, and he's just like a bullet.
Yeah.
And he gets there. And then there was a thing about guys just KYP, knowing who they were guarding. There was possessions where guys close, short to guys that could shoot it. ran at guys that couldn't shoot it in both games. Even the game in Australia, like guys are running at Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like things like that. Like, no.
Know your opponent,
and,
yeah.
And when Elfrid Payton has only been going to the paint the whole game, you're still running at him.
Mm.
So like, yeah, it may happen throughout the course of the game because you're flying around, but like at some point, if this guy's attacking the rim and you jump or sprint at him, you gotta come out the game for that. It's the only way I can teach you.
Yeah. He's a terrific, then, by the way. He's a great. We gotta get this higher up in the podcast. You gotta send me a screenshot of your notes before we start recording, by the way.
I know. And then there was a play in the home game against an Australia game. They ran for Gary Trent Jr. coming out of the half, beginning of the third. They got an open three that was really good. Showed some of the types of plays he's going to run. It's like Gary slipped out of a screen and got a flare.
I remember you talking about with Thad Young, right?
Yep. With Thad Young? A double screen, double action play.
They ran that for Pascal Siakam too, and that's where he made one of his threes against Chicago. It was a similar play. Anyway,
might as well go through the rest of them now. I'm almost
done. Yeah.
Malachi looks good. Body looks good. He's gained some good weight, moving good. He was really good in the game at home in Australia because they got more minutes. Good hezos, good stuff he was doing. All 10 threes in the first half assisted, which is big time. Like, means guys are driving, kicking, finding too many jump passes. I wrote that down.
Brady Dick, he's guilty of that. Yeah,
but then just the pace. Like, guys are just really trying to buy it. You can tell that they're being drilled on it. They're being told, like, they're just saying, like, hey, we want to move that ball. We want to play. If you got time, if you got space, you shoot it. If you can't, you pass it, drive it. But we're not going to hold that ball. And that's conditioning also. Oh. And that's the end of the segment of CJ's notes.
That might have to be an actual segment, actually. That's pretty good. Those are awesome.
I can do that.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Anything you wanna close out with, or we get to dip out here?
Young guys, I know that even if y'all don't watch the podcast, any players that young guys, just keep going. Like, the preseason is tough because everybody's learning, and you have so much more to learn. You kind of get, like, I shouldn't say pushed to the side, but there's so much emphasis on other things that it's hard to break through because you're still trying to catch up to just the level of play, not to mention the system, the new coaches' styles, and like all that. You're just trying to catch up to what in the world I'm supposed to be doing every day, right? So my biggest thing is just keep going, keep playing. It's going to be nice. You're not going to play. My rookie year, we played the Toronto Raptors, my first preseason game, actually. I remember this. My first two shots was the air ball, and the second one hit the backboard like a rocket, like, right? And then I went on in the game to have like 15 points, hit a shot that sent the game in overtime at the buzzer. We ended up winning the game. I do not play the next two preseason games.
Mm.
So just keep that in mind, right? Like, this is not about you at this time. This is about the unit. Things will become more about you as they start to see where things fall into place. So don't let that discourage you.
That's good stuff. All right, bro. As I've mentioned on the previous podcast, we will be recording every Thursday and releasing every Thursday. So that's going to be the deal. Lots more CJ to come on Yahoo Sports Canada, Strictly Hoops podcast.
I know. That's what it's like. My first game was really against the Toronto Raptors. I never thought about that. So right now we're just talking about that.
Meant to be.
Man, it's crazy. All right, y'all. Thank y'all. Push the buttons, like button, like it all. Do all that good stuff. And go listen to the songs. That's it.
There we go.
Peace.
eBay,
what's it like
to see the moment? Feel yourself growing. This is greatness that I'm showing. Close your eyes, I'm still glowing. Close the door, I'm still going. This is grand business. Have a seat and be a witness. Hey, what's it like?